loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome to WFUV Sports exclusive NBA podcast, Pick and Pod. I'm Ben Oppenheimer alongside my co-hosts Bradley Byrne and Trey Rodriguez. Some interesting things to talk about. This week, we're going to talk Knicks first, and they've been up and down recently. Definitely have had a stretch in the past 10 games. They're 5-5 where they've had some losses that they really thought should have been winnable games. But at the same time, even though they've been kind of up and down, they're third in the East, and they are still solidly ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. They're 27-15. They are 3.5 games ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, when you look at this team, I've always thought they have a very, very offensively potent starting five. But when you go to the bench, they've really gave up some of their depth from last year and you can say the year before that. So I definitely think the Knicks need to make some moves at the deadline. Or at least try to, maybe try to move Mitchell Robinson. I know, obviously, many would object to that and think he's a great defensive presence on the team, but the bench is very thin right now, and that can be the issue. Is, you know, heading to the playoffs, this team could be already tired and injured and banged up, and they just might not get very far. So definitely a goal of this team and Leon Rose should be make this team a little deeper. But right now, or not right now, but shortly, 7:30 p.m., Timberwolves are coming to town to play the Knicks. And Timberwolves have been somewhat disappointing in their own conference. But I want to stop monologuing. I want to stop doing my villain monologue. And I want to include my two co-hosts here. Guys, what do you think of the Knicks at this point in the season? Definitely a good record. Third in the East on paper is great, but some things simmering under the surface that shows not everything is smooth. What's your assessment so far?
So as you talked about earlier, Ben, you talked about the Knicks' depth, and I don't know if you've heard the rumors. Well, you're the Knicks beat reporter, so I'm sure you've heard the rumors, but you're thinking of going out and trading for Jonas Valanciunas, which in my opinion, I think it would be a great trade for the Knicks. And I don't know if you guys use Fanspo, but you do hypothetical trades. And if the Knicks can trade Mitchell Robinson and Jericho Sims straight up, no picks, for Jonas Valanciunas, and it would work. Even though that probably wouldn't happen, the Knicks would have to throw in maybe a second rounder or two in there. I just think that the Knicks need depth because the Knicks are a very top-heavy team. If one of their starters goes down, they're basically done for. Like, they need all five guys to be at their best, because as we've seen multiple times this year, when one of the guys in the starting five doesn't play well, the whole team kind of just falls apart a little bit. And recently it's been OG and Anobi a little bit. I don't like to slander OG, but he's just kind of been a little bit on the downward slope for the past couple of games. But I'm glad that Mikal Bridges is finally, you know, back in the form that I wanted to see him in. But I think the Knicks' biggest problem is depth, and going into the playoffs, if the season ended right now, it would be a rematch of the Knicks and Pacers, and the Pacers are a very fast-paced team, and the Knicks will get tired if they continue to play fast like that, so they need depth. That's their biggest problem, in my opinion.
Right?
Yeah. I think, really, this is kind of where when you start getting to the trade deadline, you see this is where this Mikal Bridges trade, which I was talking about with Bradley before the show, might start to come back and haunt them. And the fact that they have no draft capital to actually trade away. And
yeah.
So now that they don't have draft capital, they're gonna have to look at trading away some of their players in order to get depth. So like that Jonas Valanciunas trade, you're getting back. Jonas is great. Honestly, it'd probably be a pretty easy trade to get because he probably doesn't want to be in Washington because he's like a solid player. He doesn't really need to be there. It doesn't fit his timeline. But with that trade, you're trading away two players for one. So you're effectively just. You're probably getting a better player in return, but you're just losing even more depth. You're losing that one extra player. So because you don't have that extra draft, because you don't have that extra draft pick, so it gets to that situation where I start to wonder, really, what can the Knicks do here to actually bolster their team or bolster their depth? Because it doesn't really seem like there's many options. Because everyone that you have on a team right now is all very important, and they all contribute to the depth. But there's not many people who contribute there in the first place. But you can't get rid of the depth pieces you already have. So it's I look at their situation, and it's something I thought was going to happen because of this overpay from Mikal trade. And obviously, Mikal has been great, but I never thought he was worth six first rounders. And I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they can do. I don't the Jonas trade makes. It makes sense because he's a good player. He's a great player, but I just think you're giving up too much because you already have so little to give in the first place.
I think some wise words from the both of you. I also want to bring up something that Josh Hart has said in some post game locker room comments. Is he's talked about, I don't know if you guys have seen these clips, but Josh Hart has repeatedly, after losses in recent weeks, talked about egos and playing together as a team, as one unit. The question is that I'm interested in. Now, again, I'm wondering if you guys even heard about Hart saying this stuff. But I'll just bring up an example from SNY Knicks beat reporter Ian Begley. So Josh Hart was asked if the Knicks have enough to compete versus the top eight teams in the NBA. This is after the Thunder loss, which was very that was tough at the Garden, a beatdown at the Garden. Josh Hart says, in terms of do they have enough to compete versus top eight teams in the NBA, he says, "I think we do, quote unquote. We have to go out there with energy. We have to go out there with no egos. We have to go out there with no individual agendas. We have to go out there and sacrifice." You know, I think I know human behavior pretty well. Now, I'm not a psychologist, but that feels like almost, you know, it's like if Bradley was saying, you know, "I think our hosting needs to be stronger. I think our like, I'm not saying you would say that, Bradley, but it's like, or if Trey was saying, you know, "I think some of our backgrounds on Zoom need to look nicer because, you know, I'm in my messy room right now." You weren't saying anything about me by name, but you kind of, you know, I guess it's more of, I mean, it's usually it's not applied to this sort of situation, but you ever hear the term dog whistle? This almost feels like a dog whistle to, "Hey, listen up. You know who I'm talking about. You know who I'm referencing." And I'm wondering, was this a kind of a shot or a message at one of his former teammates, which I think is, you know, highly likely. But the question is, which teammate is it? Which teammate does Josh Hart believe is, you know, too focused on ego? And you know, I was talking with former Knicks beat reporter Chris Percy-Einan, from last year. You guys actually, Pinhead knows him. I just called you Pinhead on air. I'm sorry, Bradley. So I asked Chris about this, and Chris was saying, I genuinely don't know who he's referencing, but he did say he doesn't think, almost for certain, that it's campaign Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Landry Shamet. He doubts it's Brunson. And then the last thing you said with a question mark was could be Towns. What do you guys think of that assessment?
I'll just think I'll start off with that. I think this kind of actually ties into something I think I saw literally yesterday, where I don't know why in the world Cat ever did this, but they were playing against the Sixers on Wednesday, not yesterday. It was Wednesday, and he was wearing an Eagles jacket there. And so I don't know why you would ever represent the other team in your own place, but it kind of just shows that like that's where you're at. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know where Cat's originally from. I'm guessing he's from Philadelphia, right?
From New Jersey, I think.
New Jersey.
Yeah,
Okay, so
he's from Northern Jersey. So I
yeah.
guess, I mean, Northern Jersey usually roots for the Knicks, or not the what am I, not the Knicks, but the New York sports teams if you're in Northern Jersey. But you can root
Maybe
for some Philly team.
he's still a fan, but still, why would you ever wear that? So I guess it kind of just shows like what I'm trying to get at is like, I guess he's kind of shows that like he was kind of just prioritizing himself there over the team in a very like in a very it's not like
A
basketball,
harmless way,
but
a
it's a
harmless
harmless
way.
way, but it still shows it, right? And so I bet now with the All-Star game coming up and people are trying to push to get to that first team or that starting lineup on the All-Star game, and people are gonna want to start or Cat, since if it's not probably Brunson, and he's talking about Cat, maybe Cat's taking too many shots that he should have. He's trying to get that 3-point percentage up. He's trying to get those points up, and I'm sure that's what he's referring to, or maybe he's just stat padding. I mean, look, a year ago, or a bit under a year ago, when Cat had that 60-something point game, he was doing great in the second half, and then he was trying to go and he's trying to go ahead and really push for more points. So he just started chucking up more and more threes, and they eventually lost the game to the Hornets because of that, because he got benched. He was taking too many shots. You look at something like that, and it happened there, and it probably could happen in New York too.
And then for me, I feel like honestly, I in some instances I feel like Cat hasn't taken enough shots because I don't think there should be a single game where Josh Hart, Mikal, or OG should be taking more shots than Cat. I just simply think that unless Cat isn't playing well and Mikal, OG, or Hart are having an insane game, I don't think that there's really any situation, especially in the playoffs, where any of those three guys should be taking more shots than Cat in a game. The reason why they brought Cat in here was to kind of be the Robin to Brunson, but me and Trey talked about this earlier. I think now it's kind of Cat's team. I feel like he's kind of stepped up as the leader, and he's having the better season than Brunson. As much as I hate to admit it, as a diehard Brunson fan, I have to, keep it real. And Cat's been having a better season, and in my opinion, I think he's probably maybe the fourth best point in the league. The only people I really take over him are Jokic, Giannis, and SGA. Other than that, everyone else is debatable in my opinion. So I think Cat sometimes doesn't take enough shots. Maybe he could take a few less threes, being that he is technically the center in the starting lineup when you have Harden there. So maybe take less threes and maybe drive more, because Cat most of the time will be bigger than his matchup. Being that he's 7 foot and he's so versatile, Cat needs to take advantage of his height. And we always have this problem with Wemby. We say that maybe he takes too many threes, because I don't know if you guys saw the stat, but Wemby's average shot distance is almost 20 feet. And
Yeah, it's
20% of his shots
ridiculous.
in paint, and 50% of his shots are three pointers. So maybe Hart's trying to say Cat should sacrifice not shots in general, but maybe sacrifice some of the shots that you really shouldn't be taking, and maybe that can help benefit the team more. Because Cat taking less three pointers, those shots could go to other players like Hart, Mikal, OG, or even Deuce or Campaign. So maybe Cat should be taking less shots in general, take less bad shots, if that makes sense to you guys.
That's really good. I think you nailed it there.
I think both of you guys nailed it, in terms of that's a very interesting angle, Trey, is that perhaps that
Towns, when he has been on the floor, when he has been putting up the volume of shots that he has, obviously I'm not disparaging his good name or his reputation, but everyone in the world has egos. Everyone likes to, think of themselves in a nice light, and me included. I'm not a saint. I'm working on it. When I think about Towns, I think he's been excellent so far for overall for this team, and what the role he's been asked to do, I think he's been excellent. But I do sort of think there is an interesting angle there of some games where the shot distribution between the players may be a little bit unbalanced, and perhaps there's some frustration there where, oh, it's Cat always getting fed the ball beyond the arc, or always in a certain location on the court, and maybe that's leaving some of his teammates disgruntled, in that they feel a bit left out. But I think that also shows part of this is growing pains in terms of the trades this team has made, revamping the starting lineup. I mean, you look at the starting lineup from the Knicks 23 to 24 season, go back to opening night, October 2023, and think about what their starting lineup looked like, where it was RJ Barrett, it was Julius. Obviously Brunson was still there. But Hartenstein was there. That's not the case now. And so this team has made a lot of moves, even when it seems like you've all gotten used to each other, that the pendulum can swing the other way, because it's still their first season where they've all played with each other. And a lot of times people think, I feel like when they think about acquiring talent for teams, they think of it as like an NBA, my team thing, where, oh, just put all the talented players and it's good. It's like, no, I mean, obviously talent is what matters, but it's not a fantasy team. You have to deal with chemistry issues. You have to deal with egos, as what started off this conversation. And so it's definitely, team chemistry, team growth is not just about talent, even though obviously talent is what leads to winning basketball games and ultimately winning a championship. But it's about fostering an environment of where teammates really trust each other, really know one another. And you have to give a healthy environment for that to develop. And I'm not saying there hasn't been a healthy environment, because I think the overall vibes on this team have been great. But for me, it just shows growing pains. Now, as for what Bradley said, I think it's interesting how you talked about games where OG or McCall have shot more attempts from the field than Cat. And I sort of agree in that, OG and McCall are not meant to be the main scorers. And I've gone to numerous games where I beat reported where those two guys are the main two options. And that's great that they have that ability to be that offensively lethal, from three, from driving inside to the lane. That's excellent. But really, at the beginning of this season, you thought the main guys who would be going for, 40 points on any given night would be Brunson, and it'd be Cat. Maybe OG or McCall would get, 30 every now and then, or 25. But I think it shows that it's all in flux. Roles are fluctuating, and people's ideas of who they are as players and what their certain role is, that can change over the course of a season. But look, I mean, McCall, he's been up and down, but remember McCall's Christmas Day game, if you guys watched that, where he was the hero of that game against Wemby. All
Like
the credit,
42.
all the credit in the world to McCall, for scoring in such a high pressure situation, where it looked like Wemby was just taking over and dominating, closing out the third and then into the fourth. It looked like the Spurs are going to wrap this thing up, and then Mikal Bridges said, "No, no way, Jose." Just like no We are at the Garden. We are playing at the Garden on Christmas. And I think Mikal Bridges obviously still hugely vital to this team, but my point is overall that it takes time to fully co coalesce as a team and know what everyone's role is.
Yeah, I
And I think
think
with the Knicks, like in my opinion, sorry to interrupt you, I just want to get
you're
this
good, or
and then maybe you guys can share your thoughts. In my opinion, this might be a little bit of a hot take. Aside from Boston, the Knicks are the only team that has a starting five where one of those players can take over a game. I don't think any other team besides the Celtics and the entire NBA has that ability where anyone in their starting five can really be the leader for a game and just take over.
I don't think Josh Hart could. I just don't see it in Josh Hart. Like,
Hey, Josh Hart has a scoring ability when necessary, when needed.
yeah, like I, but I, he's a great player, but I don't think. I think a game where you have to rely on Josh Hart being your main scorer is would be a scary game. But the four other Knicks players, I think absolutely, yeah, I totally agree with that. They can all drop 40.
Well, we've talked a lot of Knicks. I want to be fair to the non-existent Nets fans across the tri-state area, and talk some Brooklyn Nets basketball. Nets right now, 12th in the East, 14-27 on the season so far, and they started out somewhat promising that maybe they could be a play-in team, but now it appears that they really are towards the bottom of the conference. Only teams behind them are the Wizards, who are awful, 6-33. Then you got the Hornets at 9-28, and then the Raptors at 10-31, and then there's the Brooklyn Nets at 14-27. Brooklyn Nets in their last 10, 2-8, and they're obviously in a rebuilding phase. You look at their roster right now. Really, the main player that I would think of when I think of the Brooklyn Nets is that I think of Cam Thomas, but also Cameron Johnson, and Nick Claxton as well. Ben Simmons, at this point, I not to trash on the guy, but I think he's just totally irrelevant from what people thought he would be 5, 6 years ago when he was first drafted in 2016, and then he got injured. Then he started out in 2018. They thought he'd be the next LeBron, and he's not exactly been that. But when you look at this team, is there anything promising? Any trends that are, exciting for the Nets as an organization or their fans? What do you think is the general picture of this Brooklyn team right now?
Well, just from looking actually at you said that I noticed they went 2-8, and I just wanted to see what teams they actually beat in those, and what team they actually beat for those two games, and both times it was the Bucks, and ever since December, the only team they've beaten have been the Bucks and the Raptors, and that's like literally it, and the
Blazers.
Pacers actually. And you said the Blazers?
Yeah, they beat the Blazers on Tuesday.
Okay. So, and I guess, and then the Blazers. So, I mean, they always play really good against the Bucks for some reason. I noticed that. Like, they always have absolutely great games when they go against them. But besides that, I mean, clearly they're just having a really, they're in a really, really rough stretch right now. And I mean, it's to be expected when you have a team that really doesn't have anyone on it, especially Cam Thomas has been hurt. So he's been hurt like periodically throughout the season. So you haven't really gotten much consistent play or minutes with him. So, but regarding the future, and should Nets fans have hope? Yeah, they absolutely should. And they have so many draft picks. If they just play their cards right, play like how the Thunder are doing. Their well not rebuild how they did their rebuild and how what they're going to do now with these future picks, I mean, there's no reason why you can't end up like a Thunder and like a Thunder team and maybe like 6 years or something. I can imagine the Nets being really good towards the end of this decade. So I think there's a lot of promise for this team. I think really all the players that are on it right now, though, I think Claxton is the guy you keep around. I don't really I don't know if Cam Thomas is going to be. I don't. I can't really see Cam Thomas being a guy that is going to be like a future building block for the Nets, because I don't think that Cam Thomas is a building block guy, because he's like he's he. I can't imagine not being the num not being a leading player on a team, being the leading ball handler on a team, leading scorer. I can't imagine Cam Thomas being part of their future. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but in my opinion, I think that's true. But I think that Claxton is your one player right now that you look is it your one player right now that you look at that has already showed that they. That has already shown that they are a very solid player already. They can be great. He's great at rebounding. He's great on defensive glass. And you guys have got so many draft picks, and that's so between the draft picks, and you do have some solid young players besides Claxton, but Claxton's just always the first one that comes to mind when I think of the Nets. And I think that there definitely should be reason for excitement. It's just hard to find it right now, because they've been very poor for the past few years, but I think in the future they can be a very solid team. They just need to wait a bit.
And yeah, I feel like after that big three with, or technically big four, big five, if you want to include DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, and I don't know what your definition, if they were considered part of that super team, but in my opinion, I think they are, because you tried to get two guys who were kind of washed to be part of your super team. And I feel like ever since I guess quote unquote the Beatles broke up, it's kind of just been like, it's been horrible for them. I feel bad for Kurt Sippel, especially. The only Nets fan in all of America that I know is Kurt Sippel. Shout out to Kurt. But at least the Nets, they're trying to capture the flag this draft with Cooper Flagg. I'm hoping they get Cooper Flagg just so they have something to look forward to next season. But I think Cam Johnson is gone at the trade deadline. I think Oklahoma City is going to surrender some of their picks to get him just for, I guess, to have another part. Because they're OKC doesn't even need to make trades regarding players. They just need to get rid of those picks because they're so young, and these picks are going to go to waste if they don't trade them, because they don't really even need to use any of their picks over the next couple of years because they are so young and they're probably the best team in the league. I don't think they should really tweak the roster. Maybe just, I guess, obviously they need to trade it for Cam Johnson, but yeah, as you said, I don't see Cam Thomas being a leader of a team that has aspirations to maybe make the playoffs within 5 years. So I don't even see him being on the Nets by the start of next season. I wouldn't be surprised if Cam Thomas really gets traded, maybe get some more picks for him. The Nets are just trying to get as many picks as possible and then just rebuild from there. Kind of, I think Oklahoma City, with their rebuild, it only took them what, maybe 2.5, 3 years. I feel like that's kind of lucky that they went from literally the second overall pick to now possibly winning the finals. I think it's going to take Brooklyn slightly longer just because completing a rebuild quickly is almost impossible unless you're lucky like the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I guess the Nets are just looking towards the future for the time being.
Well, we're running out of time here, guys, but I want to ask one more general question, or I guess a brief list of questions about the state of the league this season. First question is, and it's kind of a fun one, is who do you guys think is the favorite to win the NBA MVP?
I guess I'll start. I Jokic. I think Jokic is my favorite player ever, actually. But I think he's by far the best player in the world. What he does out there for the Nuggets is incredible. He literally, when he's off the floor, they're the worst offense in the NBA. When he's on the floor, they're the best. So It shows that much right there. He is the most valuable player to the team, and I don't think there's an argument. I really don't. I see all these people on Instagram and stuff saying that Shea should be it or Giannis should be it. I don't think there's an argument. I think it's Jokic.
Bradley.
Yeah, so I think Jokic had a better season than he did last year, and he won the MVP last year. And he's, I believe he's second or third, or he's like top five in points. He's top three in rebounds, and he's top three in assists. When he's on the floor for the Nuggets, they are, like you said, the best offense. And then when he's off the floor, they're basically terrible. When I look at the MVP, is when you take the best player off the team, who is better? So in this case, if you take Jokic off the Nuggets and then you take SGA off the Thunder, what team is better? In my opinion, I think the Thunder would be better without SGA than the Nuggets without Jokic. That's kind of how I view the MLB MVP. Like, that's why I think Francisco Lindor should have won it. There might be a little bit of bias as a Nets fan, but I think the Nets were way worse without Francisco Lindor than the Dodgers were without Ohtani. But this is not nosebleeds. This is picking pod, but back on track. Yeah, I think Jokic it really shouldn't even be a discussion. I see a whole lot of OKC fans saying that SGA is the best player in the NBA, and I just don't think that's true. I think there's three players that are better than Jokic, Giannis, and Luka. I think Luka fully, like 100% healthy, could be the second best player in the NBA. But yeah, as you asked, I think Jokic hands down the MVP.
Well, my mind says Jokic, but and you guys may think this is crazy and obviously biased because I'm their beat reporter, but my mind says Jokic, my heart says Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yes, preach. I didn't want to be
And
the biased person to say it. You said it. I'm glad you said it for me.
yeah,
you Knicks fans, you Knicks fans.
Glad you said it. I didn't want to be the biased Knicks fan on the show.
No, leave that to me, Pinhead.
All right, good.
It's interesting because I'm looking at the NBA MVP ladder right now. It's SGA 1, Jokic 2, Giannis 3, Towns 4, Wemby 5, and then the next five are Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Cade Cunningham, Anthony Davis, and then outside of that, Brunson is actually in the next slate of players. So obviously Brunson's been great, but he's not going to win it this year. Better chance of winning it last year when he was incredible last year. Not that he hasn't been great this year because he still had a great year. But my other question is, who do you guys see as who's not the favorite? Just pretend you're Nostradamus. You already know who's going to win. Who's winning the NBA Finals this year, guys?
I know they don't have the best record in the East right now. They're very close. I mean, they're second, but it's the Celtics. I'm still so high on the Celtics.
Okay.
I'm not sold by the Cleveland record whatsoever. I'm like I don't know. I they're not they what? I don't know how many wins, but I only have six losses. They are not a six loss by this point in the season team, I feel like. I just feel like they kind of just found themselves here, but I think by the time the playoffs come, it's gonna show. They're not gonna be as good as a six loss team is right now. So I think the Celtics will very easily make it to the finals. I think the Thunder will be a hard matchup for them. But the reason why I don't think it's the Thunder is because I think they're still young. I think they're still a very young team with not a lot of experience, and I think that could definitely hurt them. I think it could definitely hurt them in the long run. We saw what happened with them against the Wolves last year. So, I still think it's the Celtics. I know it's a boring answer, but I think the Celtics are just an incredible team. They're so good.
Yeah,
Bradley?
I unfortunately, as also another biased Knicks fan, bias to the side, I have to go with Boston. I think Cleveland is the fourth best team in the East. The Magic fully healthy, I think are better than Cleveland, in my opinion. We're forgetting that the same Cleveland team lost to RJ Barrett and Julius Randle 2 years ago in five games, by the way, when we had RJ Barrett playing 40 minutes a game and the Cavs got out offensive rebound in the entire series by Mitchell Robinson. but I think people are overthinking. I think it's a Boston Celtics. I don't think OKC is going to make the finals, honestly. I think they're going to lose to Denver in the Western Conference Finals. I just think that Jokic in the playoffs, I think, can be Oklahoma City. I'm still not sold on OKC just because they are so young and they've won one playoff series and they still haven't been fully healthy. So by the time everyone's fully healthy, how is that chemistry going to work? I know they're the best defense right now while injured, but is the chemistry really going to, work? But regardless, if Boston is fully healthy, then they are definitely hands down winning the finals.
I'm sorry, guys. I think you're both wrong. I think Boston is excellent, but they've maybe slightly regressed from last season. I think last year was their peak of what this organization at this point in their history was trying to achieve with this group. The Cavs, I'm sorry to any Cleveland fans who are listening, if we have any Cleveland fans of the WFUV, the Cavs are total fakers. Total fakers.
Thank you.
I'm not even joking, guys. I think the Knicks, as currently constructed, could beat the Cavs in like 5 or 6 games. I'm not kidding. When I took,
They almost beat the Cavs the second game of the season. Well, they blew the lead, but still. And versus the two.
the Knicks beat the Cavs when Brunson and everyone was injured during a regular season game last year, and they beat them at Cleveland. I think the Knicks just have the Cavs number. They have the Cavs number. There's no other
Everyone
way to
in the
say
East
it.
had the Cavs number. The Bucks had the Cavs number. The Magic healthy at the Cavs. Cavs are the most overrated team in the NBA. I don't care what anyone says.
No, I agree. I agree, Bradley. But to wrap this up, they say defense wins championships. I witnessed myself watching the Knicks Thunder matchups, the two of them that we saw. That defense is punishing, it is powerful, it is strong on the perimeter and in the interior. I've got the Oklahoma City Thunder winning it all, guys, but I know you'll disagree with that. But we're gonna find out, either way. So that'll just about wrap things up on Pick and Pod, this week's edition, the exclusive NBA podcast on WFUV Sports. I'm Ben Oppenheimer, alongside my co-host Bradley Byrne and Trey Rodriguez, wrapping it up for tonight or wherever, whenever you're listening. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll be back next week on WFUV Sports.